Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
You know, I believe that he truly could have done something and show no emotion towards doing something that bad. And growing up, yeah, I was intimidated by him. He's a big guy.
I remember police officers coming to my house to talk to me, and Jackie would be scared and hide under the bed. She didn't want to talk to them. But I remember, like, sitting at the kitchen table talking to detectives or police officers.
We have a couple of cold cases here in Muskego, and this one obviously is a case that we're continuing to work because, you know, you just have to take a look at it from a fresh perspective and read through all of the different case files and interviews that were done and try not to put yourself in, you know, the moment. You have to keep an open mind when you look at these investigations and think, well, what can we do in 2018 that, you know, wasn't done in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and even 2000s in regards to this case in order to try to figure out what happened.
38-year-old Donna Mae Barrell disappeared from her home in Muskego, Wisconsin on May 6, 1979. According to Donna Mae's husband, John, the two had an argument that evening and Donna Mae left in her car. John claims that he went to bed that night, but awoke later when he heard doors slamming inside the house and someone rushing about. He assumed this was Donna Mae. He then heard a car turn around in the gravel parking lot across the street and then slowly drive away. He later got up to investigate and found Donna Mae's car parked in the garage, but Donna Mae was gone. 14,258 days. That's how long Donna Mae's family has been searching for her. Her parents passed away without ever knowing what happened to their daughter, and her children have grown up wondering if their mom was murdered or if she simply abandoned them. What happened to Donna Mae on May 6, 1979? Many believe they know the answer, but those suspicions have never led to finding her. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 124 of The Vanished, part one of Donna Mae's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices and audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. One of Donna Mae's daughters, Jackie, contacted me at the beginning of the year. Jackie was just 4 years old when her mom vanished, but as she grew up, she became very involved with her mom's case. Over the past several months, she got me in contact with the detective handling Donna Mae's case. I was lucky enough to speak to him and review her case file. Jackie also got me in touch with her sister Jody and her aunt Joanne, who all provided their own insight into the case. Even though I've spoken to many people, some witnesses are now deceased, so all we have are the statements that they gave many years ago. I was able to get some other podcast hosts to lend their voices to help bring these statements to life. During this first part of the story, we're going to go over what happened leading up to Donna's disappearance and the months that followed. Leading up to Donna Mae's disappearance, she was living in Muskego, Wisconsin with her husband John and two daughters. Jody was 7 and Jackie just 4. Donna Mae stayed home with the girls while John worked. She was pretty isolated and only had one close friend who lived in Michigan. By all accounts, Donna Mae was a devoted mother. One thing that you'll notice is that some people call her Donna Mae and others just call her Donna, and some people flip back and forth between the two. Donna Mae kept in contact with her family. Her mom, Estelle, has since passed away, but she was one of the last known people to speak with Donna. Jody had just turned 7 a couple weeks before Donna Mae went missing. Donna Mae had plans with her parents to celebrate Jody's birthday. But then Jody came down with the chickenpox. Here's a portion of Estelle's statement from 1980, where she explains these final conversations that she had with Donna Mae.
A week before Jody's birthday, 20th of April, Donna called us to go and have a piece of birthday cake with the family. During that week, Jody came down with the chickenpox, though. So Donna called and told me that Jody had the chickenpox, if we were still going down for her birthday. I said we will wait until Jody is better and we will all enjoy her birthday. Jody was still quite sick on her birthday, April 30th. So Donna and I talk on the telephone and I said, well, why not wait till Mother's Day and we can celebrate both occasions at one time? So we agreed that the family would come over for supper at our home. At the time, Donna said it might be best if you did not come to see Jody yet, because you might come down with the chickenpox. I talked to her again, about 3 to 4 days before her disappearance. I could not detect any difference in her voice, and that was the last time I spoke to her.
We don't know exactly what transpired in the days that followed the discussion Donna had with her mom, but no one realized that anything was amiss until Donna's husband, John, contacted her family. This is what Estelle had to say about that phone call and the events that followed.
On Monday, May 7th, 1979, sometime after dinner, John Bear called us. Ernest answered, and John asked Ernest if Donna Mae was here. Ernest answered, no. John said, she left and never told us where she was going. Then, between 5 and 6 in the afternoon, John called again and asked to talk to me. He asked again if Donna was here, and I said, no. He said, I wonder where she went. She did not take the girls along, and that's one thing she never does, is to leave without the girls. I said, John, we will go over, because this did not fit right with me, what he was telling us. He replied, no, it is not necessary. I said, we are going over. He then asked if Joanne would take care of the girls Tuesday if Donna was not back by morning. John made clear that whatever we were going to talk about, that the girls are not present. When we got there, Jackie said, Mama is gone and is not back yet. Jody was at the CCD, so Joanne told John she pick up Jody and took Jackie along. This is what John told us. On Sunday afternoon, Donna went to Stein to buy some rose bushes. Then the girls wanted to go to McDonald's for supper. So we went, ordered, but when we got our order, Donna said she did not feel well, had abdominal pains, and did not eat. After we were done eating, we went home. Donna did not say anything while we were at McDonald's, but after we got home, Donna started to accuse me of all kinds of things. So I got mad and we had a disagreement, but not enough to make her leave the house. Oh, and I am not going to tell you what the disagreement was, and a lot of things I am not going to tell you. I said, John, I am not asking you what the argument was. That's for you and Donna to talk things over and settle your disagreement. John said, I went to bed around 9 and then I heard Donna leave with the car. I fell asleep and a couple hours later I heard her drive back in the garage, come in the house. She was banging doors, went down to the basement and all rooms and was in a hurry. Then I heard the door leading in the garage close, heard a car turn around in the gravel, and that's all I know. So I said, John, you mean to tell me when you heard all that racket in the house and never got up to see what's going on? He said, why should I? She was mad at me. I repeated again, are you trying to tell me with all this racket and a car turning around in the gravel, you did not even get up? Well, I got up then, but it was so dark I did not see anything or the lights of the car were out. Then what did you do? Went back to bed. Did Donna bring any clothes with her? No, all her clothes are here. I said, John, I do not care what you say, but You will never have me believe that Donna left without the girls and Jody sick. That I shall never believe. John said, Yes, I cannot figure that out, her leaving and not taking the girls along. She lived just for those girls. Now, according to his story, all this happened Sunday, May 6th, and he let us know only on Monday, May 7th. I then asked, John, did you notify the police? He said, Yes. What else did you do? He said, What else am I supposed to do? I said, Call all motels? Betty, your sisters, Mary and Bernie? He said, No, I did not. Then I said, I will. He said, No, I will, but it's no use calling motels because I know she not there. I said, How do you know? I just know. I said, Who fault was it to start this argument? He hesitated for a while and said, I guess it was mine, but I will not tell you what it was about and lots of other things. Which was the second time he used that statement. When Donna comes home, how are you going to handle the situation? Give her time and a chance to explain. He said, If she wants a divorce, I don't. I do not know what she wants to do. I know she wants to come back because when she left through the back door of the garage, she took along that spike we put to lock the door because I cannot find it. When I heard John say divorce, it surprised me very much. There, I knew something really happened more than leaving willing. Then I said, Aren't you going to call the officer again? He said, Well, if she not here by morning, I'll get in touch with the officer. So again, I said, What else are you going to do? Well, he said, I am not going to call the motels because I know she is not there. So I said, Believe me, when Donna comes back, we are going to have a real talk and I'm going to get to the bottom of this. And if you are not going to do anything, I am, and I will get to the bottom. And whoever the fault is, they won't forget it. I said, Was Donna starting menopause? Because, you know, that's very hard on a person's nerves. He said, Not what I had known of, but she told me that the doctor told her she could not take those pills no more, so I wanted her to have hysterectomy surgery. But Donna said no, he said, and I only wish Donna would have been different. I said, In what way, John? He said, Just different. And I said, Yes, but in what way? No answer. Then he said, I'd give anything if she walk in now. But those were only words in his voice and looks, no emotion of any kind, as if she was in the house. I repeated again that Donna would never have left without the girls, and by now she would have contacted me if it was possible for her to do that. So Joanne came back and no more was said.
Joanne becomes very important to this story because John asked her to come stay at their home. He needed her to help with the girls. They were surprised to find that John, who had always refused to do laundry, even at times when Donna Mae was physically unable to do it herself, well, he had done a bunch of laundry right after Donna Mae vanished.
John asked Joanne if she'd come and take care of the girls until other arrangement could be made if Donna wasn't back. He also said Jody had a dentist appointment if we could go with her, so I went either Wednesday or Thursday of the same week. Joanne said she'd take care of the girls. I said I'd come along and we would help do laundry. John said all the clothes were washed and he did the wash on Monday. Donna had all the clothes sorted out, so I washed rugs and all. This surprised me for him to wash the clothes because when Donna had a hemorrhage after Jackie was born, I took care of Jody and Jackie at John's home. Donna was several days at the hospital. Every night, Donna would call the house about 9 o'clock and ask if John were home. But John would never come home and about two to three in the morning. One time he got home, made his breakfast, and went to work. Not once was he to the hospital to see Donna. When Donna came back from the hospital, she was weak and asked John to do the washing. He refused. So on Tuesday, we were stripping the bedding, and I was going to strip John's bed. And I thought this was odd. Donna washes her bedding on Thursday or Friday, but still, only one side of the sheet showed that only one person slept in the bed. Only half of the sheet was wrinkled. Also, he claimed he washed all the rugs, Well, why didn't he wash the basement rug at the foot of the steps, which was dirty? I look in the clothes closet, and there were none of her clothes missing. No empty hanger. The clothes were very neatly hung.
So John's story is that Donna Mae left in her car, and then he assumed that she came back when he heard the door slamming. There's part of his story that you'll hear many people bring up, and that's the part where he said he heard a car in the gravel parking lot across the street. He said he heard this car pull away after the movement in the home stopped. That would lead you to believe that maybe Donna Mae came back, left her car, and then left with somebody else. What people have a hard time with is they don't understand how he could have heard a car across the street because his bedroom was at the back of the house. Estelle and Joanne tested this theory.
Tuesday night, I could sense that John resented me very much being there. When I was stripping John bed, I seen a car go by. I told Joanne to watch to see where the car was going. It turned in the gravel by the new house parking lot of the swimming pool. I watched and listened to see if we could hear the car turn in the gravel. I did not hear nothing from John's bedroom, which he claimed he heard the night Donna disappeared, and all doors and windows were closed that night and day. While I was working in the house on Tuesday, Jackie was with me, and I said, "Jackie, what color roses did Mama buy at Stein's?" "Grandma, Mama did not go by Stein's and buy roses. She was sick." "Did you go by McDonald's and have hamburgers?" "No, Grandma. Mama was sick." "Well, what did you do?" "Nothing. At night, Mama washed us, kissed us, and put us to bed, and said she was going to bed, and she was sick, and Jody was sick." Jackie was very sincere and wondered why her mother did not take them with her. "She always does, Grandma." When school was over, I asked the girls if they would like to come by Grandma for a vacation. Jackie said, "Grandma, Daddy said we never can go by Grandma no more." And I said, "Why?" Jackie said, "I do not know why, Grandma."
Obviously, Donna Mae's family was immediately concerned about her disappearance and suspicious of her husband. Donna's older sister Joanne was spending a lot of time at Donna Mae and John's house to help with the girls. I was lucky enough to speak to Joanne, who is now 80 years old. Joanne told me what she remembers about the day she found out her sister had disappeared.
When we arrived at Donna Mae's house on Monday evening, John had to show us the work he had done in the yard that day. He was making such a fuss over his rose bushes that he had planted. John asked me if I would stay that night to care for the girls so he could go to work on Tuesday. According to John, this is what happened on Sunday evening. He told me that Donna Mae and he had an argument, one of their better ones, on Sunday evening. John did not tell me what it was about. Donna Mae left the house in her car. He claims Donna had done this before, so he was not concerned. She left around 9 p.m. He watched the news and then went to bed around 11. John claims he heard someone, presumably it was Donna Mae, enter the house and rushing about and slamming doors. While in bed, before he got up to investigate the door slamming, he says that he heard a car turn around in the gravel near the swimming pool parking lot and drove slowly away. Fountainwood swimming pool is across the street from their home. After a while, he got up to see where Donna Mae was. Her car was in the garage. The garage patio door was open, and the pin used to keep the door closed was missing.
John was hesitant to report his wife missing, but Donna Mae's family was persistent.
My parents pressured John into filing a missing person report and calling Betty McComb to see if she knew anything about Donna Mae. He was reluctant to do so. He did not want to go to the police department and say that his wife was missing.
Donna Mae went missing on the evening of the 6th, and John finally reported her missing on the 9th. In that initial report, it states that John wasn't concerned because she had done the same thing previously. I'm not sure if he meant that she would go out for a drive to cool down after an argument, or if he meant that she had taken off for several days, but I can find no evidence that she had ever left her children behind for days. The more time that Joanne spent at the house with John, the more she began piecing together things that didn't quite add up to her.
On Thursday, May 10th, John went to Carpenter District Council Bowling League at Peachtree Lanes. I thought this strange. Donna Mae was missing and John was going out to enjoy himself. Somehow things just did not add up. How could John hear a car turn in the gravel from his bedroom, which is on the other side of the house? The month of May was cool, and I question if he had any windows open. Donna Mae would never leave her children. Jody was just over with the chicken pox. Her children were her life. Donna Mae would have contacted someone. No one was contacted. Donna Mae did not take any of her clothes or her car. John's reactions was not normal for circumstances. He was not concerned or upset.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Joanne also started to notice a pattern with John's statements. It didn't seem like he thought Donna would be coming back.
During the time I was staying at Donna Mae's house, John made remarks which made me suspicious and made me believe more and more that he had something to do with Donna Mae's appearance. I had kept my father's car at Donna Mae's house so that I could go to the store or home with the girls, to my home. John said that I should return the car to my dad and use his car. He would use Donna Mae's car to get to work. I could not use Donna's car because I do not know how to drive with a stick shift. I told John that I was not used to driving with power steering and power brakes. John said, "That's okay. You'll get used to it in a couple of weeks." So apparently he thought I was going to be staying there longer. John told Jody, that's my other niece, that I would take her to the dentist. One of her dental appointments was about several weeks away. So he's talking about several weeks down the road that I would be taking the girls to the dentist. Jody had a school play at the end of the school year, about a month from the time John made this remark. "Jody, I will not be able to go to the play because I have to work, but Auntie Joanne will go to see the play." So he's talking about a month yet, you know, when she's going to be in that play. John stated several times that he did not expect me to stay forever to take care of the girl. The very first week that I stayed at Donna's house, John was making plans for the future and excluding Donna Mae.
By Friday, May 11th, Joanne's suspicions had been building, so she decided to contact the police herself and let them know that she suspected foul play. When someone goes missing and their significant other says that they aren't concerned because the person has a history of doing this, why should law enforcement be concerned if the spouse isn't concerned? After Joanne had spoken with detectives, they changed the status of Donna's case to involuntary missing. On Friday, May 13th, they went back to speak with John again. This time, he hinted that he and Donna had been experiencing some marital problems. There had been a breakdown in communication, which kept getting worse over time. He also added to the story of what happened on the evening of May 6th. He told investigators that Donna had said, "I can't live like this anymore, or I'll go crazy." And she also allegedly said, "I'd be better off with a boyfriend." He claimed that she took $200 with her when she left, but you will learn later that John had kept Donna on a tight budget. He only allowed her to have a small allowance each month for her and the girls. Donna Mae's family wasn't aware that there had been problems in her marriage. She didn't confide in them much about the subject. As I mentioned earlier, Donna didn't have any close friends in the area, but she did have one very close friend, Betty, who lived in Michigan. The two kept in touch over the phone and wrote letters back and forth in between their visits. A detective spoke to Betty over the phone on May 14th, and she told them that she'd spoken to John 2 days after Donna Mae disappeared. One thing that Betty found odd about her conversation with him was that he said Donna left through the garage door, and she wondered why Donna wouldn't just leave out the front door. His reply was, maybe someone forced her out. Betty also told them that she thought it was strange that John would have been able to hear a car in the parking lot across the street. She had been to their home previously and knew the location of their bedroom. Betty said that Donna rarely drank and she didn't think that she ever had an extramarital affair. Betty did not believe that Donna would have left her girls, especially with Jody being sick. We know that Donna Mae didn't tell her family about her marital issues, but they did notice some things that concerned them. When detectives spoke to Donna Mae's mom on the 14th, she told them that John had again told her that he was not telling her the whole story, but wouldn't discuss it with her any further. In the 8 years that Donna and John had been married, Estelle had come to believe that John was a very self-centered person who showed little concern for his wife and daughters. On several occasions, he had refused to pay for the girls' medical needs, and when she visited their home, she noticed there was often very little food. Donna Mae had told her mother that John spent most of his money drinking, which left her with little money for family necessities. The Muskego Police Department canvassed the neighborhood 10 days after Donna Mae disappeared, but they didn't find anything. They contacted a shelter for women called the Friendship House, but Donna wasn't there. It was also on this day that Joanne made a discovery in the garage.
I found two clothespins in the clothespin box that had a reddish-brown substance on them. The clothespin box was on the child's carrier seat on back of Donna Mae's bike. You know, they used to have these little carrier seats where you could put your children.
John gave the police consent to search his residence, and they found what appeared to be more blood spatter on the rear service door to the garage and also on the child seat that was mounted on a bike. There were also some suspicious stains on a rug and a quilt that John had washed right after Donna Mae disappeared. They interviewed John again, and he told them that his marriage was a bad one, and he admitted that he had struck or pinched his wife at least 6 times on previous occasions. He also admitted that he had had a girlfriend for the past 2 years. They asked him to go over the events of May 6th one more time. During this conversation, he added a couple things. He mentioned that when he got up that night, he noticed the garage light was on, plus the garage door was open. He said that they locked the garage by putting a metal drift pin through a hasp. I want to explain what this is because it comes up over and over in this story. If you don't know what a hasp is, don't feel bad. I had to look it up myself. It's a piece of hardware that you can find in any home improvement store. It's used to lock things like a door or a chest. It has a hinged piece of metal that fits over a loop. You can secure it with something like a padlock, but John said they used a drift pin, which is just a metal pin that you can purchase in various sizes. He described the drift pin that they used as being about 5 inches long. According to John, the drift pin disappeared along with Donna Mae. During this interview, John refused to take a polygraph, stating that it was against his principles. He said that in the past, he had turned down jobs that required him to take a polygraph. Detectives spoke to Donna Mae's doctor, who was able to tell them her blood type, which was a match to the blood found in the garage. They were unable to get a blood type from the stains on the rug and the quilt because it had been washed. Back in 1979, they didn't have the DNA technology that we see today, so all they could do was match the blood type. But I will tell you that John had a different blood type, so the blood in the garage did not belong to John. The following day, a white bedsheet was located on the side of a road, just a few miles from Donna Mae's home. It appeared to have blood stains on it. They tested those stains and found that the blood type did match Donna Mae's. Detectives had the opportunity to speak with Jody, who remember was just 7. She told them that her parents had fought most of the day that she remembers last seeing her mom. Jody said that she went to bed that night and didn't hear anything after that. While they were at the home to speak with Jody, they took more swabs of what they thought could have been blood on the basement steps and a basement light switch. Detectives decided to go speak with some of John's co-workers. One man that they spoke with stated that John was without feelings or moral value. He would tell his co-worker about having both a wife and a girlfriend. One interesting thing that this co-worker said was that John hadn't mentioned that his wife was missing. In his opinion, he felt that John would have been a good suspect just from his attitude about his marriage. Joanne also noticed this attitude from John.
John did not show concern about Donna Mae. He acted as if she never existed. He never called the police to see how the investigation was progressing or if she could be of some help. I asked John why. He replied that if the police had anything to tell him, they would call. He said that they could tell me the news and I could let him know. John's attitude was that he had done a mighty big thing by filing a missing persons report. He had done his end of the work, let the police do theirs. That was his attitude. John was negative about Donna Mae whenever he spoke of her, which was not often. According to him, she never did anything right. For example, he criticized about leftovers in the refrigerator. Whenever I brought up the subject of Donna Mae, he had a negative remark about her. You would think he would have talked about Donna Mae every day, but not John. He was more concerned about knowing if the police had called or had visited the house.
Since Joanne was the one caring for the girls most of the time, she started to become concerned about some of the things that they were saying.
Jackie told me that her mama got lost and could not find her way home. Some bad Indian hurt her mama. Then she corrected herself and said, "Not an Indian, but some bad man hurt or killed my mama." While taking Jackie to my parents' home, as we passed Highway 36, while traveling east on Rawson Avenue, Jackie said that her daddy had gone on this road and had to go slow so that the police would not stop him. One morning, Jody told me that she did not want to be a nurse anymore. She said that when people fight, they get blood all over their faces. She did not like this.
Police interviewed Jody about what she had said about not wanting to be a nurse, and she told them that she was just talking about something she saw on television. It occurred to Joanne that if someone else had taken Donna and allegedly her keys were also missing, that person could come back at any time and get into the house. She mentioned this to John, but he didn't seem too concerned.
I told John we should change the locks on the doors because whoever got Donna Mae also has her keys. That person could come into the house, hide in the basement, or come in at night. He said he had never thought about it. He told me to hook the screen door and use the garage door opener. He would not change the locks. He had a set of car and house keys made for me about a week after Donna Mae disappeared.
Law enforcement officials continued to search different areas of interest, like a landfill, a pond, and fields in the area, but nothing ever turned up. They even had psychics come in to assist. One of the reasons that landfills were an area of interest was that John and Donna didn't have their trash picked up curbside. It was cheaper to take it to the dump themselves. Donna had a pass to take the trash over, but John did not. Jackie and Jody had told Joanne that after Donna disappeared, John had gone to a dumpster behind a store and another time to an apartment complex to dump their trash. When Joanne first came to watch the girls, she noticed that the trash cans were full. She remembers this because she had to place the trash next to the full cans. The next time she went to take trash out, she noticed that only one had been emptied. She wondered why he would have only taken one can to empty instead of both. Joanne continued to stay at the home with John and the girls, but it wasn't easy for her.
John manifested irritation over little picky things, but kept his cool over major incidents. He was upset one morning because I warmed up 3 cups of water for coffee instead of 1 cup. He said I was wasting electricity. One Friday evening, I called my parents to come for me. When they did not come immediately, John stomped through the house, was quite irritated, and would not say a word. One morning, he said he could kick me for changing the pillows on his bed.
Joanne was even brave enough to confront John herself on multiple occasions about what she thought happened to Donna Mae.
I confronted John several times about Donna Mae's disappearance. This was done after the children were in bed. The first time I approached John on the subject, I said that Donna Mae could be lying in the ditch, in the dump, at a gravel pit, or in the lake. He said she could be in the lake. Another time I told him that I suspected him of killing Donna Mae. I wanted her back. I wanted to know where she was. Again, he said he did not do anything wrong. He wished I would stop accusing him of doing anything wrong. John said the police had brainwashed me into thinking he was guilty. I told him he should go and talk to the police and tell them what happened. He said he told them what happened, and he did not want to have anything to do with the police because they suspected him. He said that I was showing my true colors, never suspected I was such a person. That would accuse him of doing something to his wife. One evening, I told him I wanted to know where Donna Mae's body was so we could give her a Christian burial. He said he did not know where she was. Another time, I told him he was on the top of my list as far as suspects were concerned. He said, what am I supposed to do? Say I did something wrong when I did not do anything? That's what he said. I told him to talk to Officer Wolfgram and tell him the truth. What happened could have been an accident. He said he did not want to discuss it anymore. He did not want to argue with me about it anymore. We were not even arguing. No voices were raised. Through all the accusations I made to his face, he kept his cool. Picky little things upset him more than when I accused him. When I accused him of doing something to Donovan, that did not faze him. But if I had some leftovers in the refrigerator, I found out about that.
When Joanne was telling me this, I was shocked. I understand that it would be hard not to confront someone that you felt was responsible for the disappearance of your sister. But at the same time, it would be scary to confront someone that you believe is capable.
I don't know where I got the courage to do that. You know, I think I was so angry. And I thought, if he would do something to me, then that'd be two people. You know, I mean, he would be stupid to do it because his wife disappeared and then her sister disappeared. I don't know where I got the courage to do it. I didn't shout or anything, you know, but I just would say. And the thing is, he let me stay and take care of the girls, even after I had accused him.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Joanne wasn't the only person to confront John with their suspicions. Donna's best friend Betty called him late one night. Betty has since passed away, but she had transcribed the entire conversation back when she called. Betty was meticulous with her record keeping, not only after Donna disappeared, but she had records of every time they corresponded. This is Betty's record of that conversation with John.
Hello?
John, hi, this is Betty.
Oh, hi.
Is Donna there?
No, she isn't.
What do you mean she isn't?
We haven't seen her in a month.
What do you mean you haven't seen her for a month? You mean you haven't seen her since you called me to tell me she was missing?
No, she hasn't come back yet.
Then where is she?
I don't know. The police were just here again. They're working on it. They suspect foul play.
How come you never called me to tell me she was missing until Tuesday night, if she already left Sunday night? You told me when you called you were fighting. Did you hit her?
No. We had an argument.
What do you call an argument? I know you've hit her. I got letters from her telling me that. I think you're lying, John.
I haven't hit her for about a year.
That's a lie. I got letters telling me different.
They found blood in the garage, and they suspect foul play. The hasp of the garage door going onto the patio is gone, and also the thing that locks the door.
If there's blood in your garage, then something definitely happened there. Did you hit her, John? Did you do something to her?
No, I didn't. I couldn't do that.
You're lying, John. You wouldn't tell me anyway if you did. Something is definitely going on over there. What were you fighting about?
The usual.
Were you fighting about your girlfriend? I know you have a girlfriend. Donna told me she suspected that last summer when she was here. She asked me what she should do about it.
We worked that out.
Where is she? Have you been looking for her?
The police are. Why should I if they are?
You mean to tell me you don't care enough to look for her yourself?
What am I supposed to do?
Any other guy would show concern and look for his wife.
The police are here all the time. They mowed the lot behind the house. They haven't found her.
Something is definitely going on over there. I think you know more than you're telling me. Donna would never just up and walk out. She loves them girls too much.
Joanne is here with them.
You mean to tell me the girls are there? What do you tell them? How can you stand to watch them miss their mother?
We just tell them we don't know where their mommy is.
If there was blood in your garage, then something happened there. You know what's happened, John. I know no one can get into your house the way you kept your doors locked.
She took off in her car at 9 p.m., then came back. Someone may have come back with her. I heard the door slam. I was in bed. It was around 11 p.m. That's what I told the police. Someone may have come back with her.
There's no way someone could have come back with her. I know Donna wasn't having no affair. She was too busy always taking care of you and the girls.
I know that. I know she couldn't have had no one. I trusted her.
Then what did you do to her, John?
I didn't do nothing.
You're lying. Something isn't right, and I'm going to call the police there tomorrow and find out. Do you know she's my best friend?
Yes, I know.
Do you know how much I'd miss her? I'm closer to her than to anyone in my own family.
Yes, I know. When I find her, or hear anything, I'll let you know, Betty.
Something is wrong, and I know it happened in your garage if they found blood. There's something that you ain't saying, John, and I'm going to find out tomorrow when I call the police.
Okay. Officer Wolfgram is handling it.
I miss her, John. I haven't heard from her for a month. She always writes, sends me coupons and my refunds. How come you wanted to go down into the basement and count them six packs?
We got a letter from you.
Well, I'm going to hang up now. You know we were supposed to come there.
I know.
Well, goodbye. Something's wrong, and only you know.
Bye.
The girls went to stay with John's sister in Upper Michigan for much of the summer after Donna disappeared. Donna's parents visited them there and were relieved to see that they were well taken care of. Remember that coworker that detectives had spoken to? They went back and spoke to him again in July. He told them that he had been watching John carefully and listened closely when he spoke. Two other coworkers had asked John about Donna, and John denied that his wife was even missing. He said that it was just someone else with the same last name. They also spoke to the woman who had been dating John for about 2 years before Donna Mae disappeared. They continued to see one another even after she went missing. His girlfriend stated that she felt he was telling the truth and that she would be able to tell if he had been lying to her. With all of the suspicions swirling around John, he decided to get an attorney, but he did continue to speak with the police department for some time after that. He let them come out again with an expert from the crime lab. This expert was able to determine that the blood spatter in the garage was at a 45-degree angle downward towards the floor, which meant that it was propelled by some type of force, rather than a dripping wound. There was a trail of blood on the basement floor that went between laundry tubs. John couldn't explain the blood in the garage, but he did say the blood on the basement floor was probably from an injury that he received while trying to sharpen a lawnmower blade. While speaking with the detectives, John agreed to take a polygraph, but before that could happen, his attorney stepped in and said no. Just 3 months after Donna Mae disappeared, John filed for divorce. Donna Mae's family wanted to take the girls. They were fearful since they believed that he was responsible for Donna Mae's disappearance. They even decided to build an addition onto their home to accommodate Jody and Jackie.
In July or August of 79, John called and wanted to talk to me. I said I would meet him at McDonald's and we could talk there. See, I wanted to be someplace where there were people around for my own safety. It was around 9 p.m. My father came along but stayed in the car. John wanted to know why he should leave the girls with my parents and me. I told him we would be the best to take care of him. My parents even had an addition put on the house. John asked if I still felt the same about him, if I still thought he had killed Donna. I said, yes, I still believe you killed Donna me. John said, well, why should I leave my girls with someone who thinks that way? I repeated that we were the best ones to care for the girls. We talked for a while, and then we left.
I spoke to both Jody and Jackie for this project. Jody had just turned 7 before her mom disappeared, and she told me what she can remember today.
I always wonder how much I remember and how much I remember because I was told something, because I was only 7 when it happened. Like, I do remember being at the McDonald's drive-thru and them arguing. And for some reason, I seem to think that was the same day, but I guess I have no way to know that for certain. And then I don't really remember anything like waking up and her not being there or anything like that. I remember police officers coming to my house to talk to me, and Jackie would be scared and hide under the bed. She didn't want to talk to them. But I remember like sitting at the kitchen table talking to detectives or police officers, and like more than once too. Like, I think they kept thinking, oh, if we bring somebody to make her feel more comfortable, maybe she'll talk more. And I remember one time they came with the nun from our church, but I don't remember who else. Like, I think I've read somewhere that there was a guidance counselor or whatever from school, but I don't remember any of that. Because I don't remember exactly what, if I remember something that happened right then or something that happened way before that. I mean, I don't have very good memory of my childhood. And so to be able to pinpoint when something happened, I guess I don't know.
Jackie told me about her memories from the time. Remember, she was just 4 when her mom disappeared.
I think about it all the time. And the memories I do have when I was that young was my parents fighting. And I would hide between the chair and the snack bar in the family room while they were fighting in the kitchen, or as the image I have in my head of possibly the youngest memory I have of my mother. And other memories I have are, and actually more recently, I've had more images in my head. And it's almost like when you wake up from a dream and you kind of remember the dream, but you can't put it into words. And I've been having some of those images of when I was a child, like maybe sitting in the back of a bike in the little child seat. I do remember going into my mom's closet to go play with her shoes, you know, walk around in the high heel shoes and so forth. And all of a sudden I realized that like none of her stuff was there anymore. And I'm sure I knew that she wasn't around anymore, but for some reason that memory of her shoes being gone sticks in my head. And I also remember the police coming to the house a lot and being afraid and hiding from them. So I do have some memories from back then. I can't, you know, like, say, oh, I remember going to the grocery store with my mom, or, you know, things that we did together, or songs we sang. I don't have any memories like that.
As I'm sure you realize, many people have firmly believed that John was responsible for Donna Mae's disappearance from the very beginning. But I will tell you that not everyone is convinced. A case this old has been handed down from detective to detective over the years. I spoke with Detective Westfall, who is currently investigating the case.
I just want to portray the fact that I'm an open-minded detective. I'm looking at this from multiple different angles. Clearly, you know, I have my suspicions one way or the other, but I cannot have a closed-minded tunnel vision investigation because it would be inherently flawed. And I am open to new ideas, new perspectives, new courses of action in order to determine whatever we need to do to help this family.
You will get to hear more from Detective Westfall, Jody, and Jackie as we dig deeper into this case. We're going to take a closer look at the relationship between Donna Mae and John, and also the relationships that they had with others. And then we're going to take a look at where the case stands today, 39 years after Donna Mae disappeared. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Donna Mae Beryl, please contact Detective Westfall at 262-679-5652. That brings us to the end of episode 124 and part 1 of this story. I'd like to thank everyone who helped me with this project, including Jackie, Jody, Joanne, and Detective Westfall. You also heard two other podcast hosts in this episode. They helped me bring to life old witness statements from those who are now deceased. The voice of Donna's mom, Estelle, was Mo Blackwell from a podcast called Targeted True Crime Domestic Violence. Her podcast covers cases that involve family violence. The phone conversation between Betty and John was reenacted by Haley, who was the host of Murder Road Trip. Her husband was nice enough to help out with that too. I'll put links to their shows in the episode notes if you're looking for something new to listen to. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to contact me, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at TheVanishPod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy the show, subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Would you like to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. Rate and review on Apple Podcasts. Your 5-star reviews help others find the show. Another way to support The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links to their special deals in the show notes. Join me next week for part 2 of Donna Mae's story. Thanks for listening.
There is a kind of a laundry list of individuals that they may not even know I'm looking for them, and it's an issue where I just am looking to clarify information from old reports and kind of starting over, and you know, and even giving me a perspective of what Muskego, the community which I work, looked like in 1979, just to make sure that, you know, I understand like what went into those reports back then that, you know, makes sense. And what recollection do they have now based on, you know, however many years passed? Maybe they weren't, you know, were afraid of retribution or didn't want to get involved back in 1979, but have information and are out there. The unfortunate thing is, and obviously this is one of our goals in terms of releasing, you know, a lot of this information, is the fact that, you know, when you read about these cases online or forensic files or even in case studies, there seems to be always some sort of big break that occurs. And because, you know, a lot of times, unlike your program, you are reading about cases that have some type of outcome. And at this case, it's still unsolved. It's still a cold case missing. I'm waiting for my waiting, or at least trying to uncover my big break in order to figure out what happened to Donna Mae.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid.
Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.